versus Holder, case 11-3907. Mr. Horn.
Morning, Your Honor. My name is Stanley Horn. I represent the appellants here, Plowman and his wife, Nellie Slavo. Mr. and Mrs. Slavo were born in the communist Bulgaria and came to the United States in 1996. They have two U.S. citizen children. They are working. They have paid their taxes. They've never been arrested or have any criminal record other than this. What happened in 1998, they filed an application for a labor certification, which was approved by the U.S. Department of Labor. They then filed a procedure called an I-140, a visa petition, and got that approved. And then, prior to that time, the Immigration Service initiated removal proceedings, where in the removal proceedings, they're allowed to apply for adjustment of status. What happened at that time was the government raised the issue of whether or not Mr. and Mrs. Plowman have committed fraud. They were victims of a procedure that the government instituted called Operation Durango. Operation Durango was a undercover operation where the government set up a procedure where they hired or got someone from the European community to go out and find aliens who wanted to get a green card. Mr. and Mrs. Plowman went to this person's office to get their passport extended, and he suggested to them that they could expedite getting their green card, although their visa number was current at that time and didn't need it. The government then, when they initiated deportation proceedings, they charged that Mr. and Mrs. Slavov were guilty of fraud, and although that charge was subsequently dropped. At the hearing, there was an interview during Operation Durango where they took a videotape of what transpired. And that's the issue that we're contesting here. We tried to get a copy of the videotape so we could get a proper defense of the allegations of fraud. Although the charge of fraud was ultimately dismissed, the government raised that when Mr. and Mrs. Slavo applied for adjustment of status. The government said that they didn't have the videotape, although they did. And that was a falsehood. What happened was in Operation Durango, and Mr. and Mrs. Slavov, according to immigration, went to the immigration office where they get fingerprinted. They went to the doctor recommended by immigration to have their medical. They took the photographs that are required by immigration, went to the interview where immigration had set up an office in a travel agency out on Belmont Avenue, and had an immigration officer come and say that he was an immigration officer and would apply for adjustment of status. Actually, this reminds me of an old Russian procedure called, I got a note here, a Potemkin situation, where it was all set up, looked like it was legitimate, but it wasn't. And so they went through the interview. At the interview, the officer stamped their passport, and they left, thinking that...
When was the $5,000 paid?
The $5,000 was paid to the travel agent. The travel agency subsequently gave it to the officer. He testified in cross-examination that he never received any money from Mr. and Mrs. Slavov. We tried to get that tape so we could properly present a defense to the IJ. The IJ refused to issue a subpoena. We took that up to the Board of Immigration Appeals to get a copy of the tape. They denied the subpoena. So it was an interlocutory appeal and wouldn't give us the tape. To this day, we have not seen the tape, other than for a brief 10-minute time that the IJ sat down and viewed the tape. He never introduced the tape into record, although he quoted it a lot in his opinion, but we never received the tape.
Well, you didn't receive a copy of the tape, but you've seen the tape, your clients have seen the tape, and they did so before they testified, so they were...
No, they testified, then they saw the tape.
I thought the order of battle was that they were permitted to testify perhaps a second time after they had seen the tape?
Oh, after a second time they saw the tape. Then they saw the tape for 5 minutes, and then they testified again.
Right. So what possible harm is there?
We never had a chance to review what transpired in the tape.
Well, you saw it, and they were given an opportunity to testify after they saw it to explain their perspective on it. So what's the harm?
We never had a chance to go over the tape with them. We never had a chance to show that the officer never received the tape, that what he told them was not true. They never got permanent residence. They never thought they got permanent residence. They didn't know what they got when he put a stamp on the passport. There was a lot of confusion if you viewed the tape to see what was going on. They had no idea exactly what was happening. And that tape would have shown that. They could have testified that if they had an opportunity to go over the tape with me.
Well, they were there, obviously. They're depicted.
Pardon me?
They were there. They were depicted.
Yes.
On the videotape.
Yes.
So to the extent that the sole legal issue we have here is the failure to produce a copy of the tape in advance.
I still don't have a copy of the tape.
Or at any time, right. But what my question goes to, what harm is there in that, since they're the ones who were being videotaped and who were depicted in the tape, so they know what happened there, and then they were permitted the opportunity to view the tape with the ALJ. I'm sorry, the IJ, and then were permitted to testify afterwards to explain themselves. So what possible harm do we have?
It was 10 years from the time of the videotape to the time they testified. We never had a time to refresh their recollection, go over the details of the interview. For example, they never testified that they ever handed the alleged immigration officer, any money. There was no testimony. He testified that he never received any money from my clients. That would have been they could have testified to that if they had an opportunity to discuss the tape with me, go over all the details of the tape and what had transpired. The confusion that was going on, they could have testified to, but they didn't have an opportunity to review the tape and discuss the circumstances.
Let me be blunt about this. I understand what you're saying, but a cynic could say that the unfairness was we didn't have a time to get our story together.
Not to get a story, to review and clarify what transpired. I mean, they would have told the truth. They have told the truth all along. They would have told the truth had they had an opportunity to clarify what had transpired.
What prevented them from doing that?
The circumstances, they were just thrust into viewing the tape and then testifying. They never had a chance to discuss it, go over the testimony with me. How can you present a case and not talk to your clients prior to that time?
Well, there was a six-month gap with one of your clients, right?
Pardon me?
There was a six-month gap between seeing the tape and recommencing her testimony with one of your clients, correct?
No, the tape was, they testified right after seeing the tape. We were in the courtroom. They went down to the IJ's office, viewed the tape, they went back and testified.
I thought she testified 6 months later, didn't she?
She testified 6 months later.
That's
right.
What I'm driving at.
Pardon me?
That's what I'm driving at. So there were 6 months to use Judge Hamilton's words, get her story together.
Yeah, but again, they didn't have an opportunity. I didn't have an opportunity to discuss it with them. If I would have had the tape, I could have gone over the details and shown
that opportunity available to you for that six-month period.
They didn't give me the tape.
But you had seen it.
Yes. Okay, but again, we talked about it, but she testified, and when she came back and the wife testified, that a lot of what happened, she didn't understand what was going on. And I could have had the tape, and we could have reviewed, and she could have seen the tape and explained to me and explained to the court what transpired.
It sounds to me, counsel, like you're arguing that either the Constitution or the statute and regs providing for a fair hearing
That's correct.
Prohibit efforts, for example, at on-the-spot impeachment with a prior statement.
Well, the statute provides that in a case of a contested hearing, the alien should have a reasonable opportunity to examine the evidence, which we didn't have. We never had a reasonable opportunity to examine the tape. The government, when we tried to get it by subpoena, the IJ refused to issue a subpoena. That's section 1229A, parentheses B, parentheses 4, which provides that when in the context of an application for discretionary relief or in the context of a contested removal, the alien shall have a reasonable opportunity to examine the evidence against the alien. We never had that. And then the IJ took the tape and incorporated it in his opinion at the time. Again, there was no way for him. This court couldn't review the tape because it's not part of the record.
Mr. Horn, your time has expired.
Pardon me?
Your time has expired.
Oh.
Ms. Workman.
May it please the Court, my name is Claire Workman, and I represent the respondent, the Attorney General. The Court should deny this petition for review because petitioners had a full and fair opportunity to present and review evidence and cross-examine witnesses regarding their discretionary adjustment of status applications.
I'd like to ask a question about the bigger picture here. This Operation Durango, I gather, it is not very clear in the briefing, but I gather the purpose was to identify crooked travel agents. Is that right?
Your Honor, the purpose...
Crooked agents who were dealing with, taking bribes, but not officers of the Immigration Service. Is that right?
The purpose was to go after the brokers...
All right.
Yes, Your Honor, who were bringing in non-citizens to try to get benefits unlawfully.
But the non-citizens were just incidental, is that right? You weren't trying to get them particularly, were you?
For the most part, Your Honor, that's correct. There is some testimony in the record by Special Agent Beckwith that there were a few non-citizens who... themselves became brokers, and so of course they were also then
targeted.
Yeah,
but in this case, these people are just, they're just part of what's going on. Which this operation is not. Was there any? And this question of predisposition is discussed here, entrapment. Was there any predisposition of these? I'm not talking about the technical requirements for criminal predisposition. I'm talking about what the realities here. Is there any indication that they were bribers, that they were out to bribe somebody?
Well, Your Honor, the court addressed this very question in Robleska, rejected the petitioner's entrapment claim. And entrapment is, of course, a criminal defense, and I'm not aware of any.
And I know that. I'm just trying to get the picture here.
Sure.
Right.
And in Robleska, the court noted that the petitioner was committing a continuing violation of immigration law.
Yeah, I don't follow that at all.
Well,
if you're violating the immigration law, that doesn't show that you're trying to bribe somebody, I wouldn't think.
Well, Your Honor, it's just that if the requirement for entrapment is read as being predisposed to commit some kind of unlawful activity,
well,
then
that's pretty broad. I mean, bribery is it? Bribery. I mean,
a willingness to speed does not imply a willingness, for example, to engage in a plan to conspire to rob a bank.
It's pretty much of a stretch, I think, but apparently these people got the message after they saw the money being slipped somewhere. It's not real clear where in the course of dealing with the immigration officer. What were they expected to do at that point? Stand up and say stop? I mean, this is a illegal procedure, and we won't have anything to do with it? These are a bunch of Bulgarians who don't know much about what goes on in the United States. I don't know how they're supposed to react at that point?
Your Honor, they did have an attorney at the time. They testified they never consulted with him before proceeding with this interview, but they also could have objected or withdrawn their applications, gone to someone afterward, after consulting their attorney. They didn't do that, Your Honor. And I just want to clarify a point about the record. The summary of the tape that was included on the record that petitioners did not object to and agreed with after making a few corrections, that indicates that that the money, in petitioners' view, the $2,500 of it, but according to the DHS witnesses, $10,000. Mr. Slavov had the envelopes in his bag, and he took them out and put them on the table and put them in front of the broker, Jack. And Jack pushed one of the envelopes to the agent Robinson. And Mr. Slavov actually testified that he realized at that moment that something unlawful was going on, and he still continued to go through with the interview. And
he may have suspected that before that.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that
there's no, you know, we don't have any evidence of that.
Well,
it might be better in the course of this thing to let these people know that the money is going to be used to bribe somebody, and they can then stop before they do it, I would think.
Well, the memorandum of the investigation that's in the record that was prepared by the agent at the time who was in charge of it, the investigation, that indicated that it was $10,000, which is quite a lot of money. And so that could be one indication that it was not everything was up front. With respect to the tape, the petitioners failed to recognize that they did not object when the immigration judge admitted the summary of the tape's contents into the record, and that they agreed with its accuracy, and they waived any characterization of that summary that the board made as an offer of proof, which in any event was reasonable because the regulations permit offers of proof, and the summary revealed the tape's substance. And the agency properly denied the petitioner's request to subpoena the videotape because the petitioners failed to show what they expected to prove with it and that they made a diligent effort to get it themselves as required by the regulation.
Are they supposed to wrestle with you guys with the FBI over getting the tape?
Your Honor, I'm not quite sure how it would work, but they didn't even ask. They could have made a request. DHS announced that they would present the videotape before anyone had testified. At that point, they did not object to having the tape shown after they first testified. They did not ask for a continuance to possibly make arrangements with the FBI to view the tape individually with their attorney. They did not even try to get the tape originally as they're required to do under the regulation.
Well, they asked for a subpoena of what was presumably evidence in a an ongoing criminal investigation, right?
The Operation Durango itself was still an ongoing investigation.
Right. So yes, what you've got is folks who are struggling with a fairly unfamiliar network of different bureaucracies, one of which has this tape for use in an ongoing criminal investigation, and presumably would be reluctant to let it go, right?
Perhaps, Your Honor. I mean,
and when they ask for the IJ to get it, and it's clearly going to be presented at the hearing, what's the conceivable purpose for refusing?
The conceivable purpose for refusing, I'm sorry, what exactly?
To provide the tape to the petitioners here, these respondents.
Well, the DHS counsel indicated there are logistical reasons. It was very...
Well, the logistical reasons were overcome by the time of the hearing, right?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, because I don't know if they could take out
just
the part.
It was presented at the hearing, correct?
Correct, Your Honor, but
okay.
I don't... Yes. I don't know if they could take out the part that was just pertinent to these.
When did you see the tape?
I have not seen the tape, Your Honor.
When did the counsel for the department see the tape?
It's not actually clear from the record when DHS had the tape in its possession and at what point the FBI gave it to them. But
let me ask you to address the language in our case, Tedeschi versus Gonzalez. Receiving key evidence on the day of the hearing seems to fall well short of this standard, that is the 1229A(b)(4)(b) standard for a reasonable opportunity to examine evidence.
Well, Your Honor, they had a reasonable opportunity to view it twice, to testify after.
Could you address that specific language saying evidence on the day of the hearing seems to fall well short of this standard?
There's another case, this court. Oh, I see that my time is up. May I
please answer the
question? Thank you, Your Honor. In Dumbia, and the court found that there was no prejudice from the immigration judge's reliance on a DHS forensic report that was not shown to the alien's attorney, and rejecting the argument that this was sprung on the alien, and stating that the court would only be concerned about fairness if such an error, if there was one, prejudiced the result. And here, there's no prejudice from the not viewing the tape in advance with their attorney, because they haven't said what that would have accomplished, how that would have overcome the extensive evidence of fraud in the record.
You would agree it was an error?
No, Your Honor, but if this court determines that it was an error, then there was no prejudice.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Martin, I think your time had expired. I'll give you 1 minute in rebuttal.
With regard to the tape, we asked the trial attorneys for the tape numerous occasions, and he refused. He said he couldn't divide it up between one video and another, just wouldn't give it to us. He said that it was in possession of the FBI and he had no access to it. But when it came time for the hearing, he had the tape and he briefed his witnesses and they all saw the tape. With regard to the money, the immigration...
They had seen it before they testified.
Pardon me?
They had seen it before they testified.
Yes. With regard to the money, the immigrant community knows that you have to pay extra funds to get things done at the Immigration Service. For example, if you want to file an H-1B and get it done promptly, you pay $1,000. If you file an application for 245I, you pay an extra $1,000. There are times when you pay the government extra money besides the filing fees. So this paying additional money would not call specific attention to it.
In cash, in envelopes to the...
However they pay them. And then on top of that, the Immigration Service sent a letter to Mr. and Mrs. Slavov continuing the charade of that everything was okay. They said that your green card is in process. They had no way of knowing that they were doing anything extraordinary.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement. Our thanks to both counsel. Our next case this morning.